The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Diaz! Golazo! Golazo de Diaz! Colombia va a ganar el tercer lugar! Luis Fernando Diaz!
So Liverpool surprised everyone, including Spurs, with a dramatic late signing in the transfer window. Took it to the wire to make Luis Diaz a Red. I'm Steve Hothersall. This is the Red Agenda with Kiva O'Neill and Mark Carey, who's the data guru for The Athletic. So he'll put some stats on top of the new signing. So Diaz, Liverpool's new number 23. I think we're all pretty excited about this, Kiva.
Absolutely, and I feel like it won't be long before he tries to get that number 7 if James Milner eventually leaves Liverpool. But I mean, you know, that remains to be seen, doesn't it? I think James Milner will be kicking about at Liverpool in another 5 years or something. But yeah, so exciting because obviously, you know, the sort of sound coming out of the club and with everyone sort of connected and different sources, and most people are saying, you know, Liverpool aren't going to do anything. It's more about maybe, you know, selling Nat Phillips and that kind of thing, and maybe loaning out a couple of youngsters. But that's about it. You know, nothing too exciting. And, you know, I think fans were sort of settled for that a little bit. And then out of the blue, here comes Luis Diaz. And yeah, just very exciting signing. And, you know, we've all spent the weekend watching clips of him. Obviously, he's a left winger, but having watched quite a lot of him, I'm just like convinced he can play in the Firmino role and convinced he can play quite centrally. I'm also convinced that he's just like a hybrid of Mane, Salah, Jota, Firmino. When I was watching him, I was like, he's got all the qualities that all of them have, so surely he's going to be the next big thing. I'm convinced by it. And if he's not, I'll be very shocked, because just watching even just the highlights of him against Liverpool, and I didn't really notice him playing for Porto that night at Anfield or even in the other group stage game, but having watched it back, it's like, oh, so that was that lad who was running dead quick with the ball and wanted to take past everyone. I think that's the most exciting thing he'll bring to Liverpool, is that dribbling and ingenuity, sort of Firmino-esque, and he just wants to do everything beautifully and he wants to just beat everyone, like playing on the street, is, you know, that kind of vibe I got from him. So yeah, just so exciting that Liverpool have signed him, and yeah, counting down the days till his debut.
Just like Kiva said, one of the best things about a new signing, Mark, is going through the YouTube videos, isn't it? I bet you've scoured a few.
Definitely have, yeah. And Kiva messaged me, and I think you since tweeted it, Kiva. He said that, you know, I've been looking at Diaz's video for 5 minutes and already I've said, like, oh my word, about four or five times out loud, which goes to show just how exciting he is. But yeah, no, he's a really exciting sign. I do actually remember him, you know, he did stand out in that Liverpool game, I think, for me sometimes, because of just how much he was kind of willing to take the game to Liverpool when, let's have it right, like Liverpool did dominate possession, especially at Anfield in that Champions League game. And he looked to be the only one who kind of had that bit of a spark. And it's a bit like Minamino when he, you know, did well against Liverpool. They think that anyone who looks half decent will go and poach them and get them, just like they did with Minamino.
Yeah, so the attributes that he's bringing, I mean, Klopp's talked about him being sort of hungry for it, mentally right as well. He's a goal getter. He's someone who appears, Kiva, like he's just going to slot in straight away.
Yeah, you'd imagine so. And I think the club have done the perfect thing almost in signing him. He's just turned 25 this month, I believe. And, you know, they've got him on, so he'll be here for the next, I think, it's 5.5 years. So obviously, throughout the next 5 years, he's going to hit his peak, which is really exciting. And also, you know, when you think of players like Salah, for example, who we thought his peak had come and gone, and then this season he's turning up looking better than he ever has, I think that's what always can bode well for signings like this. You know, Diaz might take a little bit of time to adjust to Liverpool, even though Porto, I think, play in a sort of similar way and have that kind of playing style similar to Liverpool, which I think will help him. But obviously the pressing is going to be just the demands and the intensity. More will be needed from him in that department. But obviously, you know, that's not his main job. He's here to score and assist for Liverpool, and I think he's going to do that plenty of times. And it's exciting thinking, you know, how young Jota still is and now Diaz. And, you know, you sort of look into the future when, in the past few months, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Salah's contract, maybe Mane's as well, and, you know, a bit of worry among the fan base what comes next. But obviously, you know, this is what comes next, and they're here right now. So that's, you know, really good. Get them integrated into the squad. And I think he just seems like a player. I haven't watched so much of him over the weekend, like all of us. I'm convinced that he's just going to hit the ground running.
It's almost a signal of the rebuild that you were talking about there, Kiva, saying, when's it coming? Well, this is a big part of things. Right, from a data analyst perspective, and obviously yourself, Kiva, James, you've all written on him this weekend. What is it that you notice straight away, Mark, about Luis Diaz?
Well, I mean, he's exactly as we know him to be. He's a wide forward, but he's a goal scorer, kind of as we alluded to. He's not obviously a central number nine, but he's the second highest goal scorer in the Portuguese league. The only person who'd score more goals than him this season was Darwin Nunes of Benfica, who's been scouted out and, you know, rumoured with clubs like Arsenal and Manchester City recently as well. So he scored 14 goals already this season, Diaz. But I think the thing that I always like to do is look at the kind of the underlying numbers as well. So he's scoring at a rate, or he scored in the Portuguese league at a rate of 0.5 goals per 90. So he's scoring at nearly a goal every game in a bit, let's say, which last season, or the last two seasons, he was scoring at about 1 in 3. So it shows that he's just had a real kind of increase in his goal scoring rate. Now, I always think instantly, is that because he's, you know, hit a purple patch? Anyone can, I say anyone, but it's possible for forwards to hit a really good bit of form and look like a world beater across half a season. And then, you know, across the rest of that season, they might drop off, or the following season, they might not match it quite as much. Now, this is why I looked at the underlying numbers of his non-penalty expected goals. So looking at the quality of chances that he's getting himself in, which is a bit more of an indication of how sustainable a player's goal scoring can be. So if they're getting similar chances, but they're significantly overperforming in the short term, then you think, okay, well, that's going to drop back to sort of normal levels, a normal rate. But his expected goals, so the quality of chances that he's getting, has also doubled in quality in terms of compared with the last two seasons. So it shows that he's actually getting into really good goal scoring areas and converting them as well. So it's not simply that he's just, you know, scoring from 40 yards and that's not very sustainable. It looks to me, and I know it's obviously in the Portuguese league, but it looks to me like the quality of chances that he's getting and creating for himself looks to be sustainable, which is the good news, rather than him just simply, you know, overperforming in a short space of time.
Is there any concern at all about the league level? You mentioned the Portuguese league there, Mark. From there, Kiva, over to the Premier League. Adaptable straight away. I mean, as you say, we saw him against Liverpool. He's a Colombian international. Surely he's got all the qualities necessary.
Yeah, I don't think it's a concern, really. You have to look at the player and what he's doing and the goals and assists he's scored and created this season. I mean, a lot of people I chatted to on Friday about him were saying, you know, he's highly regarded as, you know, the best player in that league. So if Liverpool have bought the best player in one of Europe's top leagues, then he's bound to be a good player and settle in the Premier League. Obviously, you know, that'll maybe take a little bit of time, which it does more often than not for a lot of players that Jurgen Klopp signed. You only have to look at, say, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain or someone like that, and how long it took Klopp to sort of put him into the squad, even Fabinho and those kinds of players, you know. It doesn't just happen overnight, and we may get that little bit of a, you know, time in training, and, you know, we're waiting for his debut, and that wouldn't shock me at all. But again, he does, having watched him, seem like a player you could just drop into the mix and he'll do fine. I think he's got that strong mentality, you know, his background, if you read up on that, where he's come from in Colombia and what he's overcome to get here. You know, he is definitely, that's his strongest asset almost, you know, other than he's a fantastic footballer, loves to nutmeg players. You know, he's got that mentality of coming from nothing and, you know, making something of himself. And he's, yeah, I'm just so excited for him to be at Liverpool. And what an amazing achievement it is for him to come all that way. And, you know, to get to this point must just be amazing. And I mean, he just sort of gives off the energy like, yeah, this is the next step. Like, I'm ready for it. And, you know, I'm looking forward to interviews because I think he'll say the exact same. And, yeah, I think he'll be the first Colombian player to play for Liverpool to make an appearance, that is. So, yeah, really exciting.
What makes all this more intriguing is the story of the signing, isn't it, Mark? And the fact that Tottenham had him very much at the top of their list as well. They already had negotiations ongoing with Porto, just the structure of that deal to be ironed out. But at the same time, Liverpool always had him there in their sights.
Yeah, and, you know, any signing for Liverpool the recruitment team and all of the data team around it, they look at these players and they scout these players for years. It's not just, you know, I was saying about that half a season that he's been doing so well. I mean, he'll have no doubt been on Liverpool's radar for a number of years. So that much is true, which is, you know, encouraging. And I think the Tottenham thing is always just, I think from a fan's perspective, it just gives you that little bit extra satisfaction to know that they've maybe stolen them away from someone else. But yeah, I think with Tottenham, I don't want to say that they're not exactly a direct rival, but it's always good to know that there's another top Premier League side who's also looking at that player. It shows that they obviously are a good player. And yeah, I don't know whether that sort of fast-tracked it a little bit for Liverpool, because I think there was, from what I understood, I think Liverpool were maybe going to try and get him in more for the summer. But the price that they've got him for, I think, is fantastic for the age, for the profile that he's at. You'd think that a player kind of in that mould, given today's kind of modern market, would be more in the region of 70, maybe 80 million, just simply because of the way that, you know, football's gone, especially in the Premier League, the prices for players. And I think that it's more in the region of 50 million, which, again, FSG's model in the profile of player, but also doing really good business. I think Julian Ward was quite key in the signing of this one. They've pulled off another coup, I think, a really good signing, but also a really good price at a really good age.
I'm reading a lot saying that Daniel Levy was incensed by all this because Liverpool had come in secretively, Kiva. But you know, let's face it, from the very top of Liverpool, John W. Henry, Mike Gordon, they were central. They were critical to this move. They'd be applauding their scouting team, wouldn't they, and Julian Ward?
Yeah, well, Liverpool have been scouting Diaz for over 3 years since his time in Colombia with Atletico Junior. And, you know, they've been building up that profile since then. Obviously, then he arrived at Porto and they were able to keep a close watch on him with the scouts based in Europe. And it just felt like an opportunity, this, for Liverpool to pounce. He was one of the players they wanted to sign more than anyone else, very top of the list. And obviously, with Tottenham making that move, you know, Liverpool were almost, their hand was forced to say, well, if we don't go now, he's going to go to Tottenham. We're going to be, you know, watching him there. And then if you do want him in a couple of seasons, he's probably going to cost double if, you know, he does kick on and do what we think he'll do and dominate. From the top level, from the scout who recommended him and the scout who've, you know, put together that profile right up to the top. And obviously, Jürgen knows what he wants. We know that. And he's got what he wants. So I think fans will be made up with that, because as much as I think there's talk all the time, isn't there, transfers, when are we signing players and all this stuff? They've signed a player now, so I guess that sort of answers that. Yeah, I mean, the last player we signed was Konate in the summer. It feels very long ago, doesn't it, that happened. So, yeah, to get someone else in the door and someone who's just so exciting, I think, because, you know, last summer we were all talking about that need to maybe replace Gini Wijnaldum, which I think Liverpool probably, looking now, did need to do. And then obviously bring in maybe another attacking player, a forward of some sort. And, you know, obviously I think they were leaving it till next summer, like the summer coming now, but obviously, you know, they've snuck in the back door and signed Diaz. And I think Tottenham fans are going to watch him at Liverpool and be very, very disgruntled about, you know, that happening. And it also happened with Adama Traore, didn't it, with them? I think they were sort of looking to sign him, and then Barcelona happened. And so not the best week if you're a Spurs fan, I don't think. But obviously Liverpool fans, very excited to, you know, having made that signing in the way it happened. Just, we all woke up on Friday morning and there it was. So I've said the word exciting quite a lot this podcast, but it just feels like...
But you are.
That's the mood, isn't it? And it's nice to feel that way.
I'm being told that Klopp spoke to him personally on FaceTime. I'm presuming no player's turning down Klopp, are they, Kiva, once he's FaceTimed you?
No, I don't think so. And I think he's very convincing at, you know, he'd probably set out what he thinks of the player and just tell him, you know, I've admired you and we've been watching you and that kind of stuff. And, you know, Diaz was probably blown away thinking, you know, Jürgen Klopp wants me. That's amazing. And, you know, he probably did have to weigh it up himself with obviously Tottenham in, and, you know, probably other clubs had tracked him and were maybe interested as well. But, you know, Liverpool pulled the trigger on this one. And I think when you FaceTime and Klopp, you know, whatever went on there was probably one of the factors which contributed to Diaz wanting to sign and wanting to play for Klopp, because that's what players want, don't they? They want to play for Liverpool, this great club with this great history, but for Liverpool now with, you know, one of the greatest managers in the club's history.
I know you said it was a decent price, Mark, but he is the fourth most expensive player for the Reds, you know, in the entire history of the football club. So there is a certain weight that comes with that as well for him.
Yeah, true. I suppose, yeah, to kind of caveat what I was saying, I suppose it's more that in the modern market across the whole of the Premier League, it's kind of, you have to kind of keep up or fall behind. But I can't imagine that, you know, he'd be too worried about that. You know, that sometimes the price of a certain player can sort of weigh heavy on them. I suppose he's got the number 23, and already I think I've seen Robbie Fowler and Jamie Carragher always, you know, saying on Twitter, I think they've said, you know, no pressure, or they've said, you know, a great number. But there's, you know, maybe more of the pressure of the number more so than the price tag. But I think it's more just representative and, you know, indicative of just the modern market. But as you say, Liverpool aren't the type of club to splash around 100 million on a certain player. So it, you know, it is a big investment. But I think it comes back to what we said before and what Kiva said of, he's a player for the long term as well. It's not someone who's 28, get him in for that price and just hope that he hits the ground running. There is time if he doesn't hit the ground running, which I think he will. But having just turned 25, for the price he's at, typical of a sort of an FSG Jurgen Klopp signing of someone who's still about to hit their peak, I think it is a really good price.
Yeah, and if Porto weren't in such a financial mess as they currently are, I would imagine they might have put up more of a struggle in keeping the player, Mark.
Yeah, I think that's a good point as well. And I think it comes back to what you said before about the you know, the quality of the league, that certain players and certain clubs who are just maybe below that bracket kind of know that their best players are going to be scouted around by especially the Premier League, but other, maybe Bundesliga or La Liga as well, that they just kind of know, a bit like Liverpool have had in the past, unfortunately, of knowing that there's a certain players maybe always got an eye on, in Liverpool's case, Barcelona or maybe Real Madrid, that I think clubs know that if you do really well for them in the short term or the medium term, there's going to be the top clubs who are sniffing around them. And I think that when Kiva said before about that jump from the Portuguese league to the Premier League, it's so dependent on the player as well. Because one that came to mind for me was when Luis Suarez came from Ajax to Liverpool. There's always that, it's kind of that similar bracket of league of, you know, the Eredivisie, it's a little bit slower, it's a little bit less physical. Can a player make the jump? And when you're as good of a player, that jump's no issue because you're that good in terms of the quality. So yes, you take the league into account, but it's all about the player. And you know, we know how strong Diaz has been. We know how good Luis Suarez was in that jump as well. So it's a little bit kind of a horses for courses, I think.
The only Colombian that we've had of note in the Premier League was James Rodriguez across the park. And that didn't last too long and wasn't exactly successful, Kiva. Was it this could have the nation of Colombia absolutely, I don't know, supporting Liverpool en masse?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, having watched James Rodriguez at Everton last season and just the excitement from Colombia about him was incredible to watch, just on play out on social media. And I do still think it was a shame that Everton fans weren't in the ground to watch James play for Everton, because, you know, there were some moments which justified football logic, didn't it? Some moments of just pure quality. Obviously, we know the way it ended and didn't quite work out the way, you know, fans would have liked, and the way he left and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's very exciting, Luis Diaz. And, you know, the feeling is from Colombia as well that he is the player who is sort of the main guy now at the national setup.
Is he their superstar?
I think so. I think his arrival sort of happened at the Copa America last summer, and I think he scored 4 goals in that competition, just lit it up. There was a goal against Argentina, which stood out. I mean, all 4 of his goals are pretty beautiful. And I think that was the moment as well when Liverpool and Tottenham and other clubs were sort of alerted to his step up in quality. It was like, okay, we've been tracking this player. He's just really arrived now. He's been showing, you know, good signs, but here's sort of the moment when it was like, right, he really sort of stood out. And I think that's when, you know, clubs were like keen and sort of really getting him in. Obviously this season, as he sort of continued that, just the half season with Porto, and stepped up a lot. Because I mean, if you compare his numbers to last season at Porto, they're just, you know, they've risen incredibly. Because there was, I think, worry, I think that's known, that when he signed at Porto, I don't think he was their sort of first choice almost. And, you know, he signed for them and there was sort of a bit of maybe concern whether, you know, he was the right fit and that kind of thing. And I think he did struggle at first, but then he just, you know, as we know, his rise has been incredible since then. And I think it will be at Liverpool. I'm just convinced by it. And if it's not, I'll, you know, hold my hands up and say it. But I'm convinced he's a he's just going to, yeah, he's going to be amazing.
You have said exciting a million times. I actually forgot they still have Yerry Mina over the park, don't they? So maybe he's good mates with him. That might help him settle down. Is it time, Mark, for maybe a Divock Origi to leave the club? 6 months left on the contract. You're looking at a couple of players there. But specifically for Divock, does this signing almost edge him completely out?
Possibly, yeah. I think it hasn't helped that he's had a bit of an injury problem, hasn't he, recently? It would be good if his stock was kind of high, having scored, you know, a few goals fairly recently, and if then maybe more clubs kind of sniffing around. But yeah, maybe. I mean, it's you know, again, true of the FSG model of kind of buying and selling at similar sort of times rather than just kind of endlessly splashing the cash a little bit. And yeah, given how, as Kiva said before, with the, you know, Jota and anyone across the Liverpool's front line, maybe bar Origi, Minamino is obviously quite versatile as well, but having that Diaz, who could play maybe a bit more centrally, he's played far more off the left, obviously, for Porto, but that versatility maybe suggests that, you know, he could play more centrally. And is there a role for Origi? It's a tough one. I don't want to say it because obviously Origi is such a cult hero. But I think that for his own career, I think he's not exactly, you know, really, he's not beyond his peak himself. And it just looks like, I think Klopp said as much, that he should, given his quality, he should go out and just have regular first team football. So I think for his sake, as much as anything, I think it would maybe be a wise choice.
Right, what's happening on the wider transfer window there? We're recording this at 8 o'clock in the morning on transfer deadline day. Kiva's there in London keeping tabs on everything. I know you've written on Fabio Carvalho, the Fulham player, the young lad who Liverpool, are they close to getting that one over the line now, but maybe him not arriving straight away?
Well, The Athletic reported yesterday that Liverpool had made a bid for Fabio Carvalho, I think in the region of $5 million. So talks are ongoing currently. I mean, obviously this podcast will go out and he could have well have signed for Liverpool or he could well have stayed put at Fulham. One of the options on the table, and to my knowledge, is being discussed is that, you know, Liverpool could sign him now and then he'll be loaned back to Fulham, who are obviously, you know, pushing for promotion to the Premier League, and, you know, he's one of their star players at just 19. So that could be something that happens potentially. Fulham didn't want to lose him at all and wanted him to sign a new contract. You know, they're very committed to that and want him to stay at the club. But I think, you know, it does look like he will leave Fulham, and whether that's, you know, this month as in today, or whether it's further down the line when his contract's up in the summer. Obviously, if his contract's up in the summer, then there'll be a lot more clubs fighting for him then, because he'll be going on a free. Obviously, I think with maybe compensation to pay Fulham, because obviously he's come through their youth ranks there. So it's going to be interesting to see sort of how the day plays out in terms of that. Obviously, we know, as I've said, talks are ongoing, and whether, you know, Liverpool are able to get a deal over the line will be, I think, another massive coup, because he's a player who's, like, we're sort of almost talking about Luis Diaz and Jota as the future now, and he's the future, if you can sort of say that. So yeah, he's a very exciting forward, and I think someone who, you know, I think that would work out if he got loaned out back to Fulham and then come to Liverpool in the summer, because, you know, be able to wrap up his time there with maybe, you know, winning promotion to the Premier League, things would end well. And because in the all likelihood, he's not going to be playing for Liverpool, you wouldn't imagine, even though he's absolutely bossing it at the Championship. So that kind of would suit all parties, I think, but still a lot to discuss and a lot on the table. And we have to say a lot of other clubs interested in him. Who isn't interested across Europe? Barcelona were one mentioned to me, and a lot more. So, you know, I think it's integral Liverpool wrap up a deal today for him, because come the summer, everyone's going to be fighting for him.
On the pod last week, we were talking, myself and James, Mark, about the fact of, you know, when is the squad going to be refreshed? How are we going to feel confident about the future? We mentioned it previously when we were talking. Do you think Liverpool fans at large will now feel just a little bit more comfortable with the idea that, there we go, Diaz, player in his mid-20s, being brought in, maybe Carvalho, young player, Harvey Elliott, all of a sudden there is the signs of the base that's needed for the next generation of this team?
Yeah, I think so, because you can almost get kind of scaremongered into the narrative as well, with Mane turning 30, I think, in April, Salah's very close to that as well, Firmino obviously as well, that the narrative can be kind of, yeah, feeling fearful that the front three are going to, you know, they're aging and aging quickly in some people's minds. But no need to worry, because there's, across the whole of the team, never mind just the midfield and the forward line, there's a lot of players with still a lot of opportunity to reach their peak and have their best season. As Kiva said, Salah's doing it now in a season at an age where we think that he might be over his peak. He's certainly not. Yeah, I definitely say so. And obviously Curtis Jones doing so, so well. The defensive line, Konate, so, so young.
Kelleher.
There's Kelleher, exactly, yeah, yeah, as a backup to that, that obviously full-back areas as well, that you've got so many players who are just on the cusp of reaching their peak as well, that it seems like this regeneration is certainly in full flow. This just makes good business sense to do all this now and have someone in the mould of Carvalho, where it's kind of like the Minamino signing, in the sense, not because of age per se, but in the sense that it's very low risk, in that, you know, even if he does come in, plays okay for a short amount of time, he's got time on his side. But it's not someone who's come in and expected, if he does come in, expected to hit the ground running. There's plenty of time with him, and it's low risk at the price that he's at as well.
Right, don't forget you can keep across everything regarding transfers, the stories that matter, on The Athletic. While we're talking about young players, let's go to the quite disturbing story of the Youth Cup. Liverpool against Chelsea Saturday night at the Academy. I was presenting this one for LFC TV and I literally could not believe my eyes what I saw. You rarely see a team lose from 3-0 up. That's exactly what happened to a Liverpool side, including Cade Gordon and the likes of Oakley Cannoneer. Did you see this, Kiva? It was scarcely believable, because they bossed it in the first half. 3-0 up by, what, 50-odd minutes?
Yeah, I wasn't at the Academy on Saturday. I went to watch Tranmere against Forest Green. You know, League Two title clash, yes, on the line. So I was there with my nephew and brother-in-law at a packed-out Prenton Park. It was a good day, but they got beat 4-0, so not the best results. So I didn't go to the Academy and check the score and was like, oh, 3-0 sounds like the cruising. Brilliant. Gordon, Bobby Clark, everyone's having fun. This is great. And then just didn't check the score till after the game and was like, 4-3, what the hell has happened here? So it sounded like just a bit of a nightmare from Liverpool. And obviously Chelsea scored the last goal in like the 95th minute or whatever to complete the comeback, which is just devastating, really, because you think, you know, that was that for a place in the quarterfinals?
The quarters, yeah.
So, you know, you would have likely thought that Liverpool would then make it to the semis and it would be another good Youth Cup run to follow, you know, getting to the final twice in recent seasons, obviously winning it not so long ago. So, yeah, just devastating for them, because those young players need games, so that was just another game for them. But I think they'll learn a lot from throwing away that lead. Obviously, you'd be able maybe to speak more about it, Steve, having been there and just watched the horror unfold.
Just unbelievable. I mean, Oakley Cannoneer, brilliant with the goal he scored. Kay Gordon didn't really have that much role in the first half, but then he scored a great second goal for them. And they were fantastic in the first half, but I think they just made too many changes in the second. And Mark Bridge Wilkinson, the under-18s manager, he'll have learnt a lot about his players from it. I suppose the only positive you can take from it, Mark, is that if you're going to lose like that in your career, get it out of the way at the youth setup time.
Yeah, I was going to say that, as Kiva said, they need, you know, these sorts of players need more minutes, but ultimately, which I know Liverpool are big on, that they also need more experience. And as you say, in like a twisted way, that is a really big experience that they can draw upon now for the rest of their career, to say, well, you know, we've all been in a game where we've been 3-0 up, been cruising, as you say, and, you know, we've got evidence that we can still lose the game. So let's not try and make sure that this doesn't happen again. So, yeah, in a twisted way, you can try and think that, put it down to experience and make sure it doesn't happen again at the team level, but also from an individual perspective, don't let your own levels drop, because it can happen. These things can happen.
Looked absolutely shell-shocked afterwards. Have to say, Chelsea, brilliant as well. Game of two halves. Just want to finish on a piece that Kiva's written about the origin of the Diogo Jota song, which I found really interesting, because, again, we talked about this on the podcast. I couldn't get the words into my head. I don't know whether people are still trying to learn them. Just give us a brief summary. It came from a far afield, didn't it?
I thought you was going to ask me to sing it there, Steve, and I was going to politely decline, even though...
We tried that with James, he was awful.
Yeah, even though it has been ringing around my head after doing that piece last week. Yeah, so basically a group of fans, who I chatted to a couple of them, and they didn't want to be, you know, didn't want to go on record almost. They wanted to stay anonymous, which I quite respect. They just want to, you know, give the song to the fans and have a good time singing it, and not sort of be like these heroes who've, you know, written this great new ballad for the cop. So full respect to them there. So one of the lads basically in the group sent a message, I think, over Snapchat. They've got like a group chat on Snapchat, and he just sent these sort of lyrics through, or whether it was a voice note of him, you know, singing the song. And then they were all like, yeah, we like this. So they then sort of played around with the lyrics a little bit. And eventually it sort of culminated in a trip to Milan to watch Liverpool against AC Milan, where I think, you know, they went to an Irish bar called Mulligan's after the game, which is, you know, a short distance from the stadium. And that's where it really got going for the first time, you know, away from them singing it, you know, themselves. You know, all the Liverpool fans were in there and started singing it with them. And then it was, I think, quietly sang it at Anfield for the Leicester game, and away at Leicester for that 1-0 defeat, and the Chelsea game as well, it was heard at. And then obviously, I think on the way to Tottenham on the coach, a video went a little bit viral. So that's when it was, you know, starting to sort of do the rounds on social media. And then obviously we know it to have kicked off in the away end at the Emirates. And then obviously at Selhurst Park, it really, really took off, you know, with the whole away end singing it. So its origins are based in Argentina from the 2014 World Cup when they got to the final. The song that sort of guided them there was the song, I think, Ignacio Jaraca, I think I might be right in saying, just thought it up in the shower to Bad Moon Rising to the tune of that. So yeah, now Liverpool have adopted it. They did used to have it for Colin Pascoe, but obviously I think Diogo Jota might have more success at, you know, it being chanted every week by the fans.
You can read all the words. You can learn all the words even from the piece that Keith has written. It's well worth checking out. Certainly clued me into something I never knew before. Mark, thank you very much indeed. All his stats and his contribution to the piece on Luis Diaz on The Athletic now. And of course, Kiva's keeping tabs on everything that's happening with the Reds on the transfer window, including that possible deal for Fabio Carvalho. Thanks to the guys. Thanks for listening to The Red Agenda as well. And it's back at the end of the week. See you then.